when I started the business, you know, a lot of people kept saying, isn't it such a solitary thing running a business on your own? And I think there is such amazing generosity amongst other business owners or artists or friends or people who just really want to support you in your venture. So I wouldn't be, you know, as afraid about that sort of element of loneliness if I was doing it again, because I think if anything, you're less lonely than you might be in a big organization.
That's Georgia Spray, and this is the On Design podcast. Hi everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the On Design podcast. I'm your host, Justyna Green. I'm very happy to have you here for the final episode of this series of the podcast. We'll be back with the pods around November time, as I take a short break from releasing those to you so that I can produce more, and we have lots more lined up. And the final guest of this series is Georgia Spray, who's the founder of Partnership Editions. And Partnership Editions was founded only 3 years ago in 2017, after Georgia spent about 6 years working in the art world, and she found a gap in the market to create a curated platform which would connect would-be collectors with emerging artists. And she's done a really, really brilliant job at it. And in this conversation, we go behind the scenes and we learn about everything that Georgia had to go through to set up the business, and kind of the first 2 years of running it, and how she was combining that with full-time work, and how she really worked really, really hard and tirelessly to turn Partnership Editions into what it is now. It's a very inspiring story, and I hope you'll really enjoy it. So here it is. If you could explain and kind of tell our listeners what Partnership Editions is, and kind of how you got started, what was the inspiration behind the business?
Yeah, so Partnership Editions is a platform that connects the group of emerging artists with the emerging or aspiring art collector who might have felt alienated by the art world. And what we do is try and curate the most exciting talent in the arts, and provide a sort of accessible entry point for people to start their collections. So accessibility kind of spans not just affordable pricing, but also we really want to open up the conversation around art, because from my background, which was in the art world, so-called, which is quite a kind of bubble, really, and a bit of an elitist sphere, I thought that there were a lot of people that were so interested in art and culture and loved going to museums and galleries, but didn't really ever think that they could actually own a work of art or collect it themselves. And so I kind of wanted to change that outlook, and for people to realize that they can start a collection with you know, just £50, and it's really something that anyone can engage in, and that they shouldn't be afraid to ask questions around around art. So that idea actually sort of started from when I was working as an art consultant. I had worked in the art world for about 6 years at institutions like White Cube and Christie's, and then for an auction house where I was focusing on contemporary African art. And then I went to start kind of my own art consultancy and go freelance. And at the time, I had a lot of friends who were probably, you know, moving into their first flat or house and really wanted to own a sort of, in quotes, proper work of art, you know, something that wasn't just an IKEA poster, something that was by an emerging artist, that they really felt like they were kind of investing in something exciting. And they came to me to sort of ask, you know, you're in the art world, where should we look? And I felt like there really wasn't a platform that I could say, you know, this is your go-to place for starting your collection, partly because, you know, a lot of the affordable platforms, I felt like we're pretty oversaturated in terms of the volume of artists and art that was on there. So I found it quite hard work to kind of, you know, pick through all of that content and to find the really good things. And I would often end up sort of bouncing off quite quickly just because I felt like I couldn't find what I really liked, even though it might be on there. So curation was an area that was sort of lacking. And then, you know, as I mentioned, this sort of approachable platform and something that was affordable as well. So that's how the idea started.
And from kind of that seed being planted, kind of how long did it take you to realize that, oh, that might be a thing that you should do or that that's something you can do? Kind of how did it kind of emerge?
Well, I think I was finding actually being an art consultant also quite hard work, because you know, when you're starting off in that field, it's quite a sort of it's quite a dogged environment, because you really have to always state your claim within a deal and to be you know, it's quite ruthless. And I found that, you know, in this art world, there's a lot of cases people are chasing the same collectors. And so, you know, these top collectors will have their art consultants. So if you're starting off trying to chase those people that already have their network established is pretty tricky. So I kind of took a step back and thought, well, actually, you know, listening to my friends, these are the collectors of the future. And I'd love to start something where I grow with them and sort of start from the ground up and really nurture the interest that I'm hearing from friends and peers. So it sort of started, you know, very much with me building my own website and doing it really as a test, rather than thinking, you know, writing a big business plan and thinking that there was a grand idea about kind of starting a business. I think it was just something I wanted to try out. And I spoke, you know, both to a combination of artists to see, you know, what does an emerging artist who's perhaps recently graduated from art school looking for their next stage in their career, and what are, you know, people, my friends and people like me who had an interest in art, what are they looking for to start a collection? And so it kind of happened quite organically. And then I actually decided to go back into full-time work. I was working for an art dealer called Ivor Bracker, who is very much in the opposite end of the art market, sort of dealing extremely exclusively with his collection of, say, Lucian Freud and Francis Bacon, but, you know, things very much in the millions. And so I was assisting him, but I was quite upfront about starting my own business at the same time, and he was quite open to allowing me to do that on the side. But you know, it really did take quite a lot of time to just set things up and do my research and talk to people. But I think having that balance of you know, full-time job to balance, you know, on the side of starting the business was actually quite a valuable thing, because it didn't apply the pressure for me to make decisions just for financial reasons. I felt like I could support myself and, you know, didn't feel, you know, too pressured to do things just for commercial viability. It gave me the time and space, I think, to experiment a bit more.
That's very interesting, because I think for many people, the kind of the place in which you were, that you were already freelancing, they probably stay there and then start kind of working on their business. I think it's a very unique approach to go, okay, now I want to do something for myself and my own thing. I'm going to look for stability and get that full-time job.
Yeah, I think I was very lucky with the kind of job that I got, because, mm-hmm. You know, and having that conversation from the outset with, you know, my employer to say, I'm going to take this job, but I want to let you know that I'm also, you know, I have ambitions to start my own business at some point. And I think he actually, you know, I was just lucky that he's the kind of person that respected that, because he'd obviously started his own business at some stage and quite a young age as well. And I think he quite liked the fact that, because it was, you know, not to diminish personal assistant roles, because they're hugely important, but it was, you know, quite an administrative position I had an amazing insight into the workings of you know, the art world and the art dealership kind of environment. But at the same time, it wasn't particularly taxing on my my sort of mental capacity, or you know, I didn't have to work. It was very specific hours, so I was able to sort of structure my time quite well, with the knowledge that you know, evenings and weekends were for Partnership Editions time, and then sort of 9 to 5 was working for Ivor. So I think it really helped to have that conversation at the early stages, rather than feeling like I was sort of hiding something or doing something.
No, I think that's a really, really right way of doing that, because then you both know kind of, you know, the situation you're in. And it's just very honest way of working. And so how long did you work kind of like that while setting up Partnership Editions?
So that was about 2 years, which is pretty amazing given that the business is only, you know, three and a bit years old. So it was for quite a long time. And I think, you know, the point at which I decided to go full time on the business, I was at total breaking point in terms of, you know, I just had no work-life balance. And I think I was finding it really hard to, you know, it was getting to a stage where I had clients, I had meetings, I had all these things to do, and I had to be at my desk between 9 and 5. So those meetings had to be in the evenings or weekends. And that's quite a big ask and expectation of other people to always be meeting out, you know, outside of working hours as well. So I think there was, and then I was using my holidays to put on exhibitions and to do, you know, Partnership Editions activities. So it was pretty full on. And I.
Yes, that was quite grueling.
And I probably took a bit too long to come to that realization. But I think, you know, there's always that fear that, if you go full time, that it's going to sort of start off quite slow. But I think being able to leave when it was at that stage, it meant that as soon as I started, you know, working full time on Partnership Editions, I was just overwhelmingly busy, and I didn't have that kind of, I never had time to panic about my decision and think, you know, oh gosh, I feel, you know, this is really overwhelming, and I need to create the work. The work was already very much up and running and there. So it was, in a way, an easier transition.
And would you recommend that approach to others as well? Or would you do things the same or differently if second time around?
I think what's so exciting about, you know, the sort of the state of things at the moment is that there is a lot more opportunity for part-time and freelance work, to supplement, mm-hmm. you know, to supplement your income and time with other projects, you know, the sort of multi-hyphen approach that so many people are taking at the moment. It is a real luxury when you're starting your own business, because I do think, you know, everyone always says being busy makes you more efficient, and I do think that's true in the early stages, because at the beginning of starting the business, I find it can be quite stop start, and having those stop moments can be a little bit, you know, you can start to overthink things a bit too much. And I don't think it's really that helpful to get in a state where you get too much inside your head and thinking about, you know, as I say, I think organic growth, if it's possible, can be quite a beneficial thing. And also, I think, you know, being able to keep quite an authentic voice and approach, and sort of, yeah, I think that can really help with your brand. As I said before, it just sort of stops you from doing things for the wrong reasons, because you've got a bit of support, you know, something to fall back on, and a bit of financial support that's not just reliant on your new business.
And when did you find, kind of with Partnership Editions, what was the moment when you thought that there's definitely something there that can definitely be your full-time role, and that it's not just an idea that you don't know if it's going to work or not?
Well, so the business was pretty far progressed by the time I left. I mean, we probably had about 15 artists on the platform. We had a concession in Liberty. We, you know, had a fully functioning website, and we had a client base, and we were kind of, you know, it was fully up and running. I was, you know, I was literally taking work in artworks into, I looked like a sort of traveling salesperson the whole time, because I had a portfolio of artworks that I'd take with me into the office, and then they would collect from me, you know, there, and I was handling all the postage and fulfillment myself. And it was really juggling a lot, but on the sort of surface, it was, you know, it was a website that, you know, thanks to the nature of selling art, looked very visual and quite presentable. So, you know, on the face of it, it was just, you know, an independent business. But behind, you know, behind the scenes, it was very much just me making it work somehow. And I think the turning point for me was I took about a week off to work on an exhibition with one of our artists, Alexandria Ko, who we did her first sort of solo exhibition together at a space called Benk and Bow in East London, where it was over International Women's Day, and we took on quite a sort of ambitious program, whereby we had the exhibition opening on the Thursday night. We had a supper club on the Friday night, where we had sort of a host of different female entrepreneurs collaborate together to raise money for Women for Women charity. So we had Alex from 26 Grains doing the food. We had Karna London, who's a really brilliant ceramicist who'd collaborated with Alexandria on some sort of ceramics that had the female nude painted by Alex on the plates, which we all sort of ate off of. And then we had Worm London, who are a brilliant female florist duo, do the flower display. And then we just invited 40 or 50 sort of inspiring women to attend. And I think that really caused, you know, quite an impact, because each one of those entrepreneurs had their own quite big social following. And it just really showed me also that there is a network to support the business. And, you know, despite being a sole founder, it's not a lonely thing at all. And that, you know, seeing all these women around me who were entrepreneurs, I think that just kind of gave me the confidence to say, this is the right time to go and pursue this. And it felt very strange kind of entering that world solidly for a whole week, and then having to go back to kind of juggling both again. So I think, you know, that was very much the time that I realized.
That's really beautiful, because like you say, you had something tangible, something quite big, and you really waited, which is really amazing to have that critical mass happening before kind of taking the leap. And then how did you feel kind of once you've decided that you're kind of, that's full time and kind of your first week? Was it as if nothing changed, or was it just a big relief that you could focus on it during the day now?
Yeah, I think it was quite a big relief. As I say, I never had a moment to really think about it, because as soon as I think another thing that I realize is that, you know, the more time you have, the more work you create for yourself. So as soon as I went full time, there were just so many more opportunities that I'd sort of been, you know, slightly stifling or holding back, because I just didn't have the capacity to do them. And as soon as I was able to actually, you know, it's physical freedom as much as the mental space to do it, I was actually able to go out and meet artists and collaborators and talk to people. And I'd been so restrained from doing that because of my day job. So I felt busier than ever, really. So I was quite lucky in that respect.
And tell me, so kind of when on Partnership Editions, what kind of work can we find, and how do you curate collections, and what kind of artists do you work with?
So I get asked this question quite a lot about what sort of what are the parameters or the kind of the things I look out for when signing on an artist or collaborating with an artist. And I guess I tend to it's quite instinctive for me, I find, because I don't really have a criteria for which artists need to fill. I mean, there are certain considerations such as price point and also we tend to work majority of the things that we sell at the moment purely for logistical reasons is work on paper because it's easier for us to store and ship and it's often linked to affordability. So there are certain kind of considerations like that, but when it comes to, you know, just having a connection with an artist and their style, I think it is almost something that can't be put into words because it is so visual and instinctive to me. And I just know that I love it often because I want to buy it myself and to own it and sort of quite worryingly do quite a lot. not great for my bank balance starting this business. But yeah, so it's something that is quite hard to articulate really, but I think I think what's exciting about it for me is that there are no expectations of an artist to have formal training or they don't have to have gone to the best art schools. I mean, we do look at art schools as a feeder for a lot of the artists because it's just a great way to discover. But, you know, many of the artists are self-taught that we work with. And it's just the visual language that I find, resonates with me in some way. The other resource that is really incredible and has just helped so much is obviously Instagram. And so I can get into wormholes quite easily of just, you know, looking through, finding one artist who leads you to another. And that's really exciting. And I think something that I find quite useful when looking at Instagram is that you can see the progression and the development of an artist. If they're quite prolific and they post a lot of their work, it's a really great portfolio, and you can see how they've developed from even, you know, in a matter of weeks. You can see how styles evolved and changed, and I think that's a really great way to kind of see work. It obviously doesn't replace the original, and we do always try and make an effort to go to an artist studio if it's possible, but it is a great way to kind of track artists. And, you know, sometimes I might follow an artist for a year before deciding that it might be the right time to work with them, because as I say, you can see the evolution quite clearly.
That's very interesting. And so, because I know, you know, some artists would kind of, especially when they're maybe not so confident about their work or they're evolving fast, they might kind of withdraw and hold off their pieces, thinking that, oh, they're not ready, they don't want people to see them. But do you find that doesn't really affect you as long as you then see progress, kind of seeing some older pieces or seeing that the artist is maybe not ready yet?
I think for me, it's really hard to say what progress means. I think something that I find quite exciting or reassuring with an artist that might sort of indicate to me that they're sort of ready or the right fit is actually consistency, because I think it's sort of about finding your voice and taking ownership of your own style. And I think often early stage artists are, you know, trying a lot of things out, which is a really great stage to be in, but there's a lot of experimentation and it might be quite kind of erratic, which is no bad thing, but I think you often start to see as an artist's career develops, maybe they have a style that is very much their own. And I think that's, I'd say a lot of the artists on Partnership Editions have a very signature style that, you know, even if they produce new collections that are based on something entirely different, you can still sort of, you know, say that's a Rose Electra Harris or that's a Venetia Berry or that's an Alexandria Coe, because, you know, they have a very authentic voice.
And what would you say, kind of as a piece of advice for artists who are who in their heads maybe haven't found the style and want to find it? Kind of what's the best way of getting there?
I don't really know. I find it very hard to place myself in the artist's shoes. I'm not an artist myself, so I wouldn't really want to sort of give practical advice like that. I know it can be very, very difficult to find that voice, but I think it is just about persevering and trying, you know, trying things out. I feel like an artist would be better placed to sort of answer that question, really, because mm-hmm. I still look at it very much from a curator's point of view or from an outsider's perspective. So I don't know how they find that voice, but I do think, you know, all art is an art history has, I don't think it's a bad thing to be inspired by other artists and to take inspiration from, you know, the art world around you. But I do think it's important to make sure that it, at some stage, it's got your own stamp on it, because we do see quite a lot of art that I feel is perhaps too trend based. And I think that's another thing that, you know, is a danger of Instagram, is that, you know, you don't want to chase the likes or get too fixated on that. I think it's, as I said, it's a really great platform to display your portfolio, but the only danger with it is if you become too fixated on, you know, if you've posted something and it's got 1,000 likes and then the next day you post something and it gets, you know, 50. I don't think that's an indication of one being a better work than the other. It might just, you know, it could be due to the algorithm, it could be due to so many things. But I think you kind of want to keep your blinkers on slightly and just not use that too much as a sort of driver of what's good and what's not.
Mm-hmm. And then, so as a curator, how would you, if somebody is, because I guess there are two types of people, if not many, many more, but there will be people who know what they like and have a certain taste and maybe have that visual eye, but they haven't started an art collection yet. Mm-hmm. But then there'll be those as well who once they see things, they know they like them, but are really not confident at starting out or sometimes maybe choosing pieces. And so how do you go about kind of starting new collections for kind of those two types or for everyone?
Well, I think that sort of point about accessibility and approachability is very important. And what we try and do on Partnership Editions is give not only enough information so you kind of have the space to, and that's a great thing about online as well, online buying, is that, you know, in a gallery, you might not have all the information presented in front of you. Whereas if you're buying online, you've got a really great research tool to be able to read up on an artist in your own time and to sort of find your feet and take time and not feel the rush of you know, having a snap decision or something that just calls to you immediately. It can you might go back to something 10 times before you really decide if you really love it. But I think another thing that we try and convey a lot in our social media and other platforms and also in our events that we host is the importance of showing an artist's process, because I think that's a hugely rewarding thing to see for a collector, because, you know, often we just see the final product and we don't really understand sort of how it was made or what the thought was behind it or what materials are used, and the sort of physicality of that process, I think, is hugely important to the piece. So that's another thing that Instagram can be great for, because you can see a lot of artists that work in their studios painting, and you can sort of really understand how they've made the pieces. But we also do events like life drawing classes, whether virtual or in person, which can be a really brilliant way to get inside an artist's head. And, you know, someone like, Alexandria Coe is a really good example, because she her drawings are of often the female nude and the body, and they're made using very minimalist mark making and charcoal. And you know, on the face of it, you think that's done in 10 seconds. But actually, when you take her life drawing class, you see that economy of line is actually an incredibly difficult skill to master, because everyone using, you know, if you're using charcoal, you really want to overwork the piece and to capture the body and to, you know, to sort of smudge it around. And having the ability to sort of convey the body in just a few lines in a few seconds is something that's really, really highly skilled. So I think it really gives you an appreciation of that final piece much more if you know the process that it took to get there.
And I guess, like you mentioned, with digital, it's so much easier now to do that as well. So there is that artist empowerment where it's in their own hands as well to kind of show how they work and connect with their audiences. And tell me more about the live, kind of all those events that you're running. And you said there were live events. Is that all part of Partnership Creations?
So Partnership Creations is actually something that we came up with more recently during lockdown, which was, yeah, we had to think on our feet slightly about, you know, what were people craving in this time of sort of either isolation or, you know, sort of slightly going a bit stir crazy at home. And I think creativity and art played such an important role in sort of not only people's state of mind, but just keeping people feeling, you know, we were sort of almost oversaturated in terms of all the digital stuff that was going on. So having something that was using your hands and taking it back to creation was, I think, a very important thing for a lot of people. So we decided to run virtual art classes, life drawing classes, where we had artists record sessions in their studios, just, you know, using their iPhones, but lasted about 20 or 30 minutes. But, you know, teaching you about how to paint in their style and what they think about when creating their works. So that was a really brilliant thing for a lot of people to just, you know, whether they were aspiring artists, to get an insight into how these artists think, or for the collectors who, as I say, wanted a better understanding of the piece, the end result and the end piece, or just, you know, families who needed an activity to keep them sort of sane. But outside of lockdown, we also run a lot of pop-up events. And in December of 2019, we did a series called In the Studio With at a location in Islington, which was three consecutive exhibitions, well, actually four consecutive exhibitions, but three artist residencies that lasted for about 10 days. So the first artist, Alexandria Coe, occupied a completely blank space, and we installed a sort of magnet system on the wall where she could start with a blank room and work live, because the idea sort of started because the space was almost a bit like a fish tank. It was completely glass fronted with a huge white back wall, and so passers by could sort of see the artist at work, and so Alex started with this blank space and was drawing live every day, and then, you know, pinning the work to her wall a bit like a sort of makeshift studio. And then the culmination, after a sort of a week-long residency, was a private view exhibition where people could come and see the kind of final installation, which really was an installation because it was amazing. She'd built up about 200 pieces that were, you know, held up across the entire space, and people could come and purchase sort of direct from the studio, with that feeling of also being able to meet the artist and really engage with the work. And then we sort of took that all down and started again, and had Rose Electra Harris in, who again completely transformed the space into something totally different. And I think it was quite amazing to see how a blank canvas can can transform so much into the sort of the mind of the artist, and it really, you know, stepping into their world each time, it was so different. But yeah, emphasizing the process in all of those exhibitions was the main objective.
And do you find that kind of that face-to-face connection, that physical connection, is something that's really important for first for the art world and also for partnership editions as a digital business, and kind of looking at, you know, lockdown and being eased off by now, do you think, will you be going back to those events as well? Or has kind of the lockdown and what's been happening this year made you think more about other avenues or different ways of working? Kind of how has that affected you?
Well, we're very lucky that we are a digital, you know, sort of on a basic level, we're a digital platform and we're able to sell art online, but I never really set out to create an e-com business. I think we want to be so much more than that. The e-com element is just a way for it to be a viable kind of way of pricing affordably, because we don't have the overheads of a gallery. But I think it's really, really important for us to show that we are real people and an independent business and a network of artists behind this rather than a product. So, you know, I also think it's much more rewarding for a collector to kind of feel like they get to know the artist that they're collecting a bit more, because what the feedback that I get from many of our collectors is that they're not just investing in an artwork, they're investing in the artwork artist themselves, and that there is this feeling of kind of excitement around supporting an artist's career and watching that flourish in front of their eyes. So yeah, just engagement and building a community for us is super important.
Mm-hmm. And kind of based on that, I have for you, kind of to start slowly wrapping up our conversation as well, I have two more questions for you. And the first one is kind of, what have you learned kind of in the first three and a half years of running Partnership Editions? And what would your advice be to anybody kind of starting out the creative business now? Because I think that many people who haven't been hit too hard kind of by the pandemic, it has been the time to reconsider career choices and paths.
So, I mean, I've learned so many things. You learn constantly on your feet when you're running and starting a business. It's a constant sort of cycle of being faced with a challenge, thinking you can't do it, and then having to make yourself do it, and sort of feeling really excited because you've overcome it. But that is the state of things all the time, and I don't think that ever really goes away, no matter how progressed or developed the business is. But I think one thing that has really stuck with me is sort of going back to that point about having a really strong network. And when I started the business, you know, a lot of people kept saying, isn't it such a solitary thing running a business on your own? And I think there is such amazing generosity amongst other business owners or artists or friends or people who just really want to support you in your venture. So I wouldn't be, you know, as afraid about that sort of element of loneliness if I was doing it again, because I think if anything, you're less lonely than you might be in a big organization where, you know, you might have lots of people physically around you, but you're not really communicating with them, which is what I found, you know, at places like Christie's, where it's a big institution, but it just wasn't as interactive. And actually, when you're on your own, you can really choose the people that you want to work with, and therefore I think it makes for really, really strong relationships and building a kind of a long-term network that's almost like a family.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful, and that just shows you like even more kind of the importance of us all staying in touch together, whether we can meet physically or not, and kind of really supporting each other. And if you had some lessons for the art world, what would you want it to do or change? Kind of how it operates?
Yeah. I mean, I think I hope it is starting to change a lot, because, you know, there always used to be this preconception about art online and how it just wasn't a way to collect or to interact with it, or it was a sort of lesser form. But I actually think, as I mentioned before, it can be a really fulfilling and enriching way to collect and own art. So I think, you know, whilst it's still really important to see the physical, you know, it shouldn't be totally replacing physical interaction and physical engagement with art pieces, because, you know, there is an element of just standing in front of something and it having the power to speak to you there and then. But I do think, you know, hopefully the art world is starting to rethink, especially with, you know, the effects of lockdown, that the digital world is a really exciting sphere for art. And then the other thing that I just would love to see, you know, more of is just this point around, you know, kind of trying to slightly move over this preconception that art is a very elitist thing, because I just think it should be very much for everyone to enjoy and to own and to collect and to engage with, and that people shouldn't be afraid to sort of ask questions around it. And you know, I think there's always that slight worry with people thinking that I don't really get it, but that's fine. You don't have to get it the whole time, because often it's you know, it's someone's idea and we don't always see eye to eye with it's such a subjective thing, isn't it? So I think people should have more confidence to engage with it.
Yeah, because so often it's just about how it makes you feel rather than the meaning of every line and object. And I think that's just a very valid way of enjoying art as well. It's just, you know, how does that affect you, and kind of having it just for yourself. The last question I have for you is, what's coming up for Partnership Editions?
Well, we have quite a few exciting, one of the major things that we like to do with Partnership Editions, sort of hence the title, is this idea of partnerships and collaborations with like-minded brands. So we're actually working on quite an exciting fashion collaboration with a brand called Bias, who do beautiful silk slip dresses. And we have three artists who have each designed an artwork to go on the dress. And I think the exciting thing about them is that they're very much, they're all limited edition pieces, and they're kind of, you know, wearable works of art. So really excited to launch that collection, hopefully at the end of July. And then, yeah, we're always looking for new artists to work with and new talent out there. So stay tuned. There's quite a lot of new artists that will be joining this year. And hopefully at some point, we did have a big roster of exhibitions in the pipeline for this year. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be happening in 2020, but we'd really like to kind of watch that space and see how things progress, and with the hope that we can get people back into, you know, congregating in a room and enjoying an exhibition opening together. So hopefully some more physical pop-ups.
Brilliant. I really, really hope that you can kind of bring them back and that all the kind of collaborations will work out as well. And congratulations on having such a beautiful business with such a great ethos as well, and kind of helping everybody really get into art. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Thank you for listening, everyone. I've really loved speaking to Georgia, and you can head over to partnershipeditions.com to see all the work she's curated and sourced from the emerging artists. And that's that for this season. And we have a few months break now. I'll miss you a lot, but I'll bring lots of brilliant new content to you. And for you to stay inspired, you can follow the podcast on social media. You can also check out the old episodes. So you can see all the episodes at ondesignpodcast.com, and on Instagram, the pod is ondesignpodcast. That's that, yeah. And also I'll be updating of keeping you posted on my own social media as well about everything that I'm doing, because, as you know, I've been doing a lot of I've been working on kind of adding more to my already chopped up freelance career by wanting to work as an illustrator. So you can see more of my journey as well on Instagram and on Twitter at Justyna Green, and you spell my name J-U-S-T-Y-N-A. I might change my name one day because it's just so boring to spell it all the time. But anyhow, that's it for now. Thank you so much for tuning in, for being part of it. I really appreciate it. It's been nearly 2 years of the pod, and I've just had a blast, and I hope you've enjoyed it too. And bye for now.